Did we decide who's hosting this one?
I was hoping you.
Oh, okay. Well, that decision.
You do better on the movie ones.
The choice has been made.
You at least try to put some sort of order to them. I'm just all over the place with movie episodes.
By default.
Well, and it kind of works out either way, because even when you try to have some order, I don't know the order, so I'm just throwing out my ideas, and they both just end up all over the place, so...
What's up? This is Movies On Up. You will be unprepared. That is word I would use to describe my co-host, Mr. Dave Bissella.
That's the most accurate tagline ever. I didn't even know we were starting yet. I thought we were still in the in-between episode, like chitter chatter, and then you start talking. So that's the most appropriate tagline ever.
You will be unprepared is, of course, the tagline for this episode of Movies On Up. If you think you know what movie that comes from, we'd love to hear about it in one of the three following ways. You can email your guest to us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guest on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/moviesonup, or tweet your guest directly to us @moviesonup on the Twitter. If you are correct, and if we choose you, you can prepare yourself for getting a sweet prize package to your home courtesy of Dave and I. This week, after much consternation, DC finally sort of gets their act together and answers the Avengers with Batman v Superman, directed, of course, by the incomparable Zack Snyder. So instead of doing some kind of Batman movie or Superman movie, we've decided to go the Zack Snyder route and do a Zack Snyder movie. And we chose The Watchmen. I'm not exactly sure why we did it. I'm kind of happy, because if I had to go back and watch a Zack Snyder movie, I don't know that I'd want to go back and watch that last Superman thing that was just a piece of shit. Sucker Punch wasn't bad.
This episode, The Watchmen is my favorite book ever. Rorschach is my favorite character in movie, TV, literature, anything. So Watchmen hold a very, very special place in my heart.
New baby name?
Watchmen?
No.
I don't think I could sell that.
Rorschach.
Oh, I tried. Actually, I tried Walter. Walter was the first name I threw out when we found out it was a boy, and it got vetoed. No, that's not public knowledge yet, but hey, we're having a boy.
Well, by the time this comes out, yeah. It's the end of the month.
That's why I wanted to do this, because there are parallels. Like Batman, Superman, there's a lot going on. You have Batman, Superman, Lois Lane, Lex Luthor, Wonder Woman. You just talk of Aquaman. Like, there's a lot going on. So I thought Watchmen is kind of a good throw-in to see how Zack Snyder handled a lot of stuff going on. I'm going to be conflicted on this movie. A lot of what I say isn't going to make sense, because I absolutely love Watchmen, the book. It's my favorite writing ever. Not as fond of the movie, which is an understatement.
Watchmen was released in 2009, starring Patrick Wilson, Malin Ackerman, Billy Crudup, Matthew Good, Jackie Earle Haley, and Jeffrey Dean Morgan. It did open up number one in March 6th of 2009, to $55 million. I mean, it was number one in front of Madea, Going to Jail, Taken, Slumdog Millionaire, and Paul Blart, Mall Cop. It went on to gross $107.5 million domestically, which is good for 552 on the all-time domestic list, right above a Batman sequel from 1997. Dave, can you guess what is 551? It is Batman and Robin, directed by the aforementioned Joel Schumacher.
Even if you, a couple weeks from now, I mentioned James Cameron when I'm trying to reference Joel Schumacher.
So keep that in mind.
In a couple of weeks or next week, or I don't know. I can't see the future. But at some point, I mentioned James Cameron when I'm really meaning Joel Schumacher. It's interesting that was right and you telegraphed it this one, because this one, not saying I would have guessed it, but I would have guessed something like this. Like, you usually ask me what's close to it. And I would think in that realm of like superhero movies that made money because they were superhero movies, but not necessarily loved superhero movies. So I would have thought like this, or Superman 2, or like
Superman
X-Men Origins.
Actually, I think six or seven up the list. And okay. I'll do up the list. The one right below it, just to finish out our game that only seems to intrigue me, is a Beyonce voiced Fox film.
Epic.
Yes, it is epic. My clues were spot on this
Another
week.
Movie with too big of a cast and too much going on.
Right, but to move up at 550 was A League of Their Own, followed by Paranormal Activity and Pulp Fiction right above that. Superman 2 was maybe the Richard Donner cut, I'm not sure. But Superman 2 is right around in that ballpark. We mentioned it's 552 all-time on the domestic list. It's number 3 all-time in R-rated comic book adaptations.
Deadpool just beat it.
Far and away Deadpool, yes. Deadpool's
Did the Wolverine beat it?
No. Deadpool is at $330 million. Number 2... Also, a Zack Snyder movie. It's not superhero. Comic book adaptation.
So 300, yeah.
Yes, at $210 million. And then Watchmen.
And can I say?
Yes.
I'm so into Watchmen that when he got the Watchmen job, I made it a point to go see 300 opening weekend because I felt the bigger that movie opened.
We went together.
We might have.
We were in the same pack.
The only reason I went was because I figured the bigger the movie opened, the bigger the budget he would get for Watchmen.
So you were trying to do your part. This was like Kickstarter back in 2009.
Yes.
I think that's actually kind of interesting timing. We're going to have, or we already did, our gang episode. The timing on that's very weird.
I think it's next week or the week after.
Because we don't really know why we did that. We know why we did Watchmen this week because of Zack Snyder. But just the way, sort of a confluence of events, we talked about it being a comic book adaptation of a very violent comic book. That's not something that has been done. But with Deadpool and the success of Deadpool in the movies and even the success of, I'll put Daredevil in there, the Netflix series, that's not for kids. But it was wildly successful critically, and it's back for its second season tomorrow as we record this.
Last week, which it's, I'm sure I've finished it by the time you're listening to this.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
And I'm sure we loved it.
And I mean, you're seeing a snowball effect. Lobo is back on. Lobo has been one of those that's been in developmental hell for a decade. And, oh, Deadpool made all this money. Let's get the writer of Wonder Woman to start fresh with Lobo. So, I mean, you're going to see R-rated superhero movies come out. And somebody wrote a really good essay about what studios are going to take the wrong things from Deadpool and about how Deadpool's not successful because it was R-rated.
Right.
It's successful because that fit the character and they nailed the character.
That had to be an R-rated.
Yeah, so it's not like...
Like Watchmen did.
Like releasing an R-rated Batman vs. Superman DVD, which they're going to, just seems like
Or an R-rated
stupid.
Wolverine. Which...
Makes
sort
sense.
Of fits the character as well. The R-rated superhero movie, this was very, very early in that process. And sort of another reason that I think this movie is relevant is you're starting to see a ton of trailers now for Civil War. And the thought behind the whole Civil War and Marvel is that there's superheroes that can't operate unregulated. In Watchmen, this is basically what would happen a couple years after if there were no Civil War, if the act came out and everybody, Captain America, said, you know what, I'm not going to argue this. This sounds like a good idea, and just retired. That's basically the world that Watchmen's in. So I think it makes this movie a little bit more relevant, again, because of what's going to be a huge movie in Civil War.
Yeah, the basis of Watchmen is, I mean, there's a lot of story leading up to where it is in this alternate 1985, but you're in a world where decades ago there were superheroes. Like a decade after that, there was the second wave of superheroes. Now it's kind of been outlawed, so they're all kind of retired except for Rorschach. But now also...
Well, and Dr. Manhattan and the Canadian.
At the same time, the world is on the brink of nuclear war. So that's one thing I always loved about the book was it's not taking place in San Francisco. Like this is right. New York City. This is President Nixon getting elected for his third term, Ted Koppel interviewing Dr. Manhattan. Like, this is the world I know. This is the real world.
Lee Iacocca shows up.
Yeah. Comedian mentions Woodward and Bernstein. Yeah. Like, this is our world in 1985, which I like that. I won't give the movie credit for a lot, but I do like that the opening credits kind of laid the groundwork for that. Mm-hmm. The opening credits gives you the feel that this is the world that you know, but it's an alternate version of that. But at the same time, while giving it credit for those good opening credits, I feel they're a little long. And I feel like you have to earn opening credits like that, and I don't think the movie earned them yet. And maybe they're basing it on the graphic novel being the majority of that $55 million worth of people, I would bet, had not read Watchmen. So I don't know that there was enough of the name recognition there to warrant those, but I do like that it set that up. And I feel like the movie should have learned from that, is that was one way to do exposition. I felt like it needed a lot more quote-unquote lazy exposition in other spots. And, I mean, to be fair, we mentioned Blade Runner either last week or in a couple of weeks. There's so many versions. I've only ever seen the director's cut of this. When it did come out, I had kind of soured on seeing it, so I did not see it because I read how they changed the ending and I realized it wasn't an adaptation for me. I waited until the director's cut to kind of see if it was any better. And then when I rewatched it, and I actually did rewatch it, that's what I hunted down, was the director's version. So I haven't seen the theatrical cut. So if what we're saying doesn't make sense, because I know you rewatched the director's cut
But I did see it in theaters. So I've seen the theatrical version and I've seen the director's cut, and I can't remember what is in the theatrical that's not in the director's cut.
I think Hollis Mason murder is the biggest thing that's in the director's cut that's not in the theatrical release.
I didn't know that. I didn't remember that.
Which
that
I don't understand how that's right. Such a big moment, yeah. That I don't understand how that's not.
Yeah, that's very strange.
But
this movie had been, talk about Lobo being in developmental hell, this one was almost as long as the book had been out. I think as early as maybe like 86 or 87.
You're talking late 80s. It was in the works.
Yeah, and it sat in the works for, you know, round about 25, 30 years. And I think a lot of it was because it was always going to be a very difficult book to adapt. And one of the reasons I think it was difficult to adapt is the time span and sort of the non-linear way the story is told. It starts with the death of a major superhero. You see the investigation into that murder, and then you see that character's life unfold over what's essentially 40 years of on-screen time, and I think that's very difficult to do. But I think Snyder did an okay job of that. That's a hard thing to pull off on screen, especially with characters you don't know and time periods that most of the people that are watching it aren't familiar with. We didn't live through the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s. But I think that when the story does jump back in time, it seems authentic. The characters, and it's mostly the comedian, because it's at that point, it's sort of his story. I feel like he seems appropriately well-aged, and the variances between the costumes I thought were really good. And I love the soundtrack. You mentioned the opening credits, starting out with the times they are a-changing. All of the music is very on the nose for that time period, which also kind of helps you get to where they're taking you to. It puts you in that frame of mind, I guess.
I won't praise the music choice. The songs are good. A lot of the song placements are roll my eyes kind of moments, like Hallelujah.
Yeah.
When Dryberg's getting some poon. All Along the Watchtower, like almost a little too on the nose.
But it's when you think of the Vietnam War, you
and
think
I,
of that
song. I get
song.
It. I get
when
it.
You think about, you know, the Kent State shooting. You think about Simon and Garfunkel, although, I mean, it would have been more on the nose had they done Ohio, but, you know,
I get what they were trying to do, but to me it just came off as cringy. It is a very hard novel to adapt because it was written in serial. It's not a page one to the end thing. Like, it was written in serials, so you had those breaks. So it was a little easier to do that kind of nonlinear storytelling. And I mean, just in the book, you have your nonlinear storytelling. You also have Tales from the Black Freighter cut in there. You also have Hollis Mason's excerpts from Under the Hood. So you have a lot going on. You take out the Black Freighter, you take out the Hollis Mason book. This is where it's going to be tricky for me, because I feel like everything I say is going to be a contradiction, because I have laid the groundwork that this is my favorite book ever. I absolutely love the story. I love everything about it. I feel like the movie is too loyal. I feel like there are too many instances where something was cut directly from the panels, put directly onto the screen, and I felt like too much was left in, to be honest with you. I mean, it's a 3-hour movie.
Right.
The
or
book
three
is
and a half the, in some instances.
At the beginning, the comedian's death, that kicks off everything. So I like that there. the go back in time, him raping Sally Jupiter, that's a big deal. I felt like they stuck on the comedian a little too long. Like the Vietnam thing, like it's a big deal in the book. It didn't add anything. You already know he's an asshole. Like he attempted to rape one of his co-superheroes. Even if you cut that Vietnam part out and him shooting at the protesters, that enough there is to know, like, yeah, he was a superhero, but he was also a super asshole. And there's a lot of instances like that throughout to where it's like, why is this in here? And the book was very, very graphic and very violent, but I don't think it relied on that. The movie, I feel like, threw some of that in there just to do it. Like, the movie wanted to be brutal and violent and R-rated when it didn't need to be. Shooting the pregnant Vietnam woman added nothing to the story. It was tacked on. You know, the brutality of the attempted murder on Ozymandias was graphic for no real reason. It didn't add anything to it. I do like the fights. The fights were very brutal. They felt very raw. Rorschach especially. Because these aren't super people, except for Dr. Manhattan. These are just people that are skilled. And that's why I like the grittiness of the Daredevil series, because it is brutal, because that's real fighting generally is. But I feel like they really wanted to earn that R rating when they didn't really need to.
We talk about how difficult the book is to adapt, and specifically, the creators have always said when they made the comic, the idea was to make a comic to take advantage of what couldn't be done in other media. If that's, you know, the goal of the creators, it's difficult to then follow that up and try and adapt it. I will admit to not having nearly the same love for the source material that you do. As a matter of fact, I read the graphic novel maybe weeks before seeing the movie, like a lot of people. I think they had to print a ton more of the graphic novels right as the promotion for the movie was coming out. I read it mostly on recommendations from guys like Dave. And I liked the book well enough. I just feel like it didn't maybe resonate with me as much as it did people that read it in the 80s or the early 90s, whenever. Certainly reading it in the early 2000s, I don't think would have been the same as reading it when it came out. And the folks that were old enough to read it in 86 would have been much closer to the events and the stories than someone of my age.
I read it late 80s. I mean, I wasn't a teen. I probably read it around 89 when I first came across it. So, I mean, I was within, but I was too young. I didn't experience Vietnam. Right. You know, I was only like 10 years old at the time.
But you were experiencing Reaganomics, which is a lot of what they're sort of lampooning here. It's not as much Nixon, although it is Nixon. They're sort of taking a shot at the Reaganomics. And I think that comes across in the movie. Like you said, you think he left a lot in. There's a lot in the book. To make that one movie is tough. And this was before, you know, you would make things into a trilogy just for the hell of it.
Or before, like, HBO series was really an option.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they've been talking about, I think HBO's been talking about doing, and that may even be dead at this point, but they were talking about doing a Watchmen series. But because I didn't necessarily have that dogmatic love of the source material, the changes, everybody kind of points to one specific change, the end, and that's why you didn't want to see it, because it wasn't an adaptation of your favorite book, because they did change the ending. I kind of liked it, to be honest. I thought it's neater. It makes a certain amount of sense. I like the fact that a lot of people had to sacrifice, and Dr. Manhattan was one of them.
To me, it doesn't make any sense, because you can't have the lines in there. The Superman does exist and he's American,
right,
and God exists and he's American. You can't have those lines in there and then turn Dr. Manhattan into the villain at the end, because he's pimped up as he is America. Like, he is this powerful being that America views themselves as. So when Dr. Manhattan becomes this killing force, I don't care if he attacks New York. Like, I don't care that he also attacks American soil. He is an American attacking everybody else. And that's why Alan Moore didn't do that. Because when you're trying to unify the world, you can't have an American be the cause of the attack. Muslims don't cause a suicide bombing and the world rallies around Muslims. It doesn't happen. That mentality, that guilt by association, one Muslim doing something bad, you turn on all Muslims.
Some people do.
Yeah, I don't mean, I mean that
Donald
mentality.
Trump does.
Yes, I don't mean, that mentality is what I'm talking about. Right. So when you're in this war, essentially, and the world is on the brink of war, and sure, it may just be between U.S. and Russia, but everybody is affected at this. So when one of them, if Dr. Manhattan was Russian and the same thing happens, they're firing those missiles at Russia. They are. That's just how it is. I can't buy that logic that an American causes this. Somebody that you've pimped up is an American. He is your weapon, and he does this. I don't care if he's gone rogue. You are responsible for him.
Right.
And you are the bad guys here. So that logic doesn't make any sense. Whereas, and I get it is the most comic book ending ever. I understand a giant alien squid falling in New York City. I understand that that is the comic bookiest of comic book endings. But it made sense, and that's why it was there, because it was the only thing that made Ozymandias' plan work. This third force that nobody was involved in. The Dr. Manhattan ending makes no sense to me, because it's the logic is wrong.
I would argue that the logic, it's there. It maybe isn't explained as well as it could have been in the movie. When you have Nixon on the television being simulcast across the world, in his speech, he's not really necessarily doing maybe as much mea culpa as you would expect that the United States would do. But by sort of taking the lead and saying, listen, regardless of what country Dr. Manhattan is associated with, at this point, he's far too big of a threat for any nation, whether it is basically Russia and the rest of the world. Even that is not powerful enough. Even Russia, America, and the rest of the world realistically are not powerful enough to stand up to Dr. Manhattan. So at that point, and I agree, I don't think the ending of the comic is lame or ridiculous because you're having an alien. So like in Independence Day, when the world has to unite against this alien force, you have Dr. Manhattan, who at this point throughout the course of the movie was transforming into sort of an alien. He's becoming more and more detached.
He has no touch with humanity.
Right, with his humanity. So while America claims him, because it is our the country's nuclear deterrent, in fact, he's really no more us than he is anybody else. At that point, I mean, he says it on
Mars. To the people that are inside, yes. But to people in Russia and China, he's an American. We've pimped him up as an American.
Yes.
Him attacking the world is America attacking the world.
But it's also very clearly when it happens in New York, it's clear that that's not America anymore. By attacking New York, he's not sanctioned by our government anymore. Clearly something has happened with this weapon. And yeah, maybe you blame, but it's not like the government created him for that sole purpose. He was around, so they used him in ways that they felt were beneficial to America, to our country. But I don't hate either ending. I like the movie ending because I'm not beholden to the other one, and because I think it does make a certain amount of sense. That's always going to be a sticking point. Like, I'm not going to convince you, and I'm not trying to convince you that it's better, because I don't think it's better. I think maybe it's a little bit neater. And in this world where it's like the Nolan world, that, okay, what would it actually be like if Batman did exist? The Watchmen world is very much, what would it be like if superheroes actually existed? How would the government and how would the nation react to that? And I think this does a great job of showing that. And in this world, I feel like the ending with an alien maybe wouldn't have been as grounded as the rest of the movie was. And I guess that's my point.
But that's kind of the point, is that it came out of nowhere. It was this otherworldly threat. It was something that didn't exist before. So now the world needs to unite to fight this thing that we didn't know about.
Is it because you didn't know about it, or just because it's powerful?
The aliens?
Yes. We have to unite because it's the unknown, or we have to unite because they're powerful?
Both. We don't know where they're coming from. They could hit anywhere.
Okay.
They have.
But if they weren't powerful, to me, I think it's the power. I think that Dr. Manhattan is just as powerful, probably more powerful than these aliens.
I can't buy into the logic that an American causing millions of deaths will rally the rest of the world around to team up with America.
When millions of them are Americans, I think that logic can hold. But, I mean, we could spend the rest of the podcast arguing on that. Something that I don't think we would argue about is that Snyder, as a director, personally, he drives me nuts. I think in this movie, and in a lot of his movies, there are some really, really great shots. Specifically in Watchmen, I love the shot of Rorschach when he goes into the men's room to deal with Big Figure.
With the door.
Yes, with the door swinging open and shut. To me, that almost looks like a comic book. Every time the door swings open, you see a frame. Door swings shut, opens again, the frame is advanced, time is advanced. I really, really like that. But with that being said, I think he relies way too much on digital and flash.
And switching the fast to slow to...
It seems like it's very gimmicky. And the movie, to me, seems like it's some sort of odd mashup of... Instead of being a live-action movie with a CG character, I feel like this movie is actually a CG movie that has a couple live actors stuck in there. And I know the sets were real, but it just seems like there was so much digital manipulation of the visuals or of the speed that it doesn't feel authentic.
And it takes you out of it. It truly does. He's a very visual director. I hate Zack Snyder. I think he's a terrible director. I will never take away that his stuff is good to look at. The colors in this are done well. The contrast, like, and I like that he created this world. I like when stuff has that feel to it. Like, you look at a Michael Mann movie like Heat. That has a feel to it. You feel like you're in that world. When these movies bring you into that world, I'm okay with that. Like, I get your point. I'm more concerned that it looks really good but says nothing than that it looks really good but just looks a little more digital. Because Zack Snyder does not get good performances from actors. He historically hasn't. And that's where a big problem comes, is that comic book dialogue doesn't always translate to the screen, and there's too much of it, mostly in Rorschach's lines, where it's word for word straight from the comic book. And in reading it, it's fine. Hearing it on the screen, it's hokey. And there's a lot of that. There's not just, like, Comedian has some of those. It's not just Rorschach's lines, but some of the dialogue is taken directly from it. It just sounds bad. He doesn't get performances from actors. Like, his name a good performance in a Zack Snyder movie. Not even, like, ripping on Zack Snyder. Name an actor in a... I think Amy Adams...
Sally Field.
Amy Adams is an extremely electric actress that I think is just commands attention whenever she's on screen, except in Man of Steel. He doesn't just not get good performances from him. He strips them of their strengths, I feel like. And Malin Ackerman is clawing away to try to be a competent actress already. So you put her in a Zack Snyder movie, and she's bad. She's really bad in this movie. Patrick Wilson is hit or miss with when he's under good direction. He's a good actor. When he's under Zack Snyder, he's hard to watch. I thought Jack Errol Haley did good. Maybe it's just because I'm so in love with that character, but I felt like he was done okay. Billy Crudup, I'm a big Billy Crudup fan. I felt like for what he was given, he did okay. Okay, though, that's it. Like, Jackie Earle Haley and Billy Crudup, I think, are phenomenal actors. They were okay in this. Jackie Earle Haley as Rorschach should be this groundbreaking performance. Like, that's perfect casting that I don't feel like they capitalized on. Matt Frewer as an aging Moloch, fantastic casting, didn't really capitalize on it. I just feel like the performances are weak, and they felt paper. And honestly, I felt like I was watching a motion comic a lot of times, which
is what you were watching.
Yeah, and
that's the
not
way Snyder makes these movies. He did the same thing with 300. He lifted it, the visuals, right off. He used the book as a storyboard for the movie, so it was always going to be like that, but I mean, you're exactly right.
Patton Oswalt had a really good rant a while ago after this movie came out about how it is possible to be too reliant on source material. it is possible to not deviate enough from it. And this is the prime example of that. I feel like there was a lot left in that didn't need to be left in. There was stuff in there that could have been explained just through exposition. It seems like for every good thing he does, there's like for every cool shot where the slow motion actually makes sense, like comedian first flying out the window, then there's 10 more shots of it right afterwards that just kill it.
Or 10 more right before it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just there's no moderation here. It's way overdone. The shot with the bathroom door, that's a great shot. What do we gain from panning back over to having the blood come out from under? We know what happened. What do we gain from that?
To be honest, I will stick up for that. And you mentioned in the movie how in many instances it seems overly violent just to be, you know, to get that R. And certainly in that prison sequence when the fella gets his hands cut off, like...
I like that.
That's fine. But I mean, that's very, very violent. This was almost the one time in the movie where they used implied gore. And that's something that it felt out of place, but it was welcomed. I thought that was a perfect way to, okay, you know the guy's dead, sure, but that just gives you that final, like...
Here's the thing. I think Rorschach going in and that shot and then him coming out, that's implied gore to me. That, I think, is really, really well done. And it's like, oh, Rorschach killed him in the bathroom. Pretty cool. But then to pan over and just have the blood come out, I think is hitting it over the head, and I think you just... erase the subtlety that you just did.
And maybe that's true, but when we're talking about a movie where literally people explode and you see rib cages and all stuff flying everywhere, I think that is still subtle, seeing a little bit of... And maybe, like I said, maybe I'm just... my perspective is skewed because of the way this movie is, that was the subtle part of it. One thing that is pretty consistent in the movie, and you've already sort of mentioned it, is the tone. And that's not just the color palette, but sort of the feel of the movie. It's dark. Pretty much the entire thing takes place at night. It's rainy. Most of the costumes are really, really dark. You might say the movie feels a little bit noir. And I think you'd be right if you said that. Because I think that. Rorschach is pretty much a sociopathic version of your standard gumshoe. He's working a case, basically. That's how we meet him, the death of an associate. And the narration he has through the journal is like almost pulled directly out of the film noir playbook, where, I mean, that's your exposition. That would have been, you know, maybe that could have been used more throughout the film. But I think that Watchmen on some levels is a neo-noir. The comic, I think, works that way. It's set up the same way, and that part of it, I think, translated well on screen.
This movie bothers me because I love the source material so much, and you follow the source material pretty closely, almost too closely, but yet I don't like this movie. And I guess at a point I start to wonder, like, is it something wrong with me? This should be just an epic, pertinent movie that means a lot and says a lot, but instead it's just a cool-looking, violent bloodfest. That's my problem, and that's my problem with Snyder overall. Dawn of the Dead, the original Romero Dawn of the Dead, had so much to say about social status and
consumerism
and consumerism and what the world was, and you know he had a black lead at a time when you just didn't see that. And then the remake, it's a cool zombie movie. That's where I feel like Watchmen was this great novel that captured a moment in time that 40 years later is still relevant, and the movie was cool to look at. That's my problem with it.
It was cool to look at, but in fairness to like the movie saying nothing, I don't think that's all on Snyder. I think that's the adaptation of the work, which Moore said many times that he'd obviously read the scripts, and there was one, I think it came in the 90s, that he thought was the best. And it may even have been, because I don't think David Hayter's was the last one, but I think that was sort of, he felt like it was the closest, but that was always going to be a long putt to be able to adapt something that the creators specifically didn't want you to be able to adapt, and to try and capture everything, because the book is taking on a lot of subjects. To try and get them all in 3 hours it's going to be a tough road to hoe. And it wasn't hoed very well. And I blame Snyder for a lot of stuff. He didn't get great performances. I felt like the movie was gimmicky, where I didn't think the comic book, the illustrations, they weren't gimmicky, because that wasn't the point. It was the story was the point, and the visuals were an accompaniment. Snyder, I think, is the exact opposite in his skill set. The story accompanies his visuals, which for something like this, for a lot of more stuff, even V for Vendetta, like the ideology behind the work is actually sort of the star. And I think that sometimes a director wants to direct the hell out of something. And I think Zack Snyder wanted to direct the hell out of Watchmen because he was maybe the script wasn't exactly where it needed to be. And the cast, certainly, outside of maybe Jackie Earle Haley, certainly weren't where they needed to be. I feel like this movie was always doomed. And I don't know what can save it. I certainly don't think a remake will save it. Perhaps.
As a 10-episode HBO series. Like, it's something like that you can do it. Because just how my mind works is, like, as I read things, I generally, if I were writing this as a script, how do I adapt it? And you know what? Watchmen didn't do a lot different from how I imagine it. Like, that's a lot of the same approach I would take, but it is a hard book to make. And I wanted to have an open mind because I'm not one of those. It's like, oh, I'm going to hate a Monster Squad remake just because it's Monster Squad. I'm not going to hate a adaptation of a book just because I love the book. I hate this movie because it's not a good movie. Maybe it's driven home a little bit more because I love the book, but I don't like the movie. It skipped over everything. Even Rorschach was the highlight of the movie, but I still don't feel he was totally captured as well as he should have been. Ozymandias, I think, was just butchered. Maybe it's because I knew, but I just felt like the tone every time Ozymandias was on the screen was like you were watching a Bond villain. Like, I just felt like that's how it was shot, so that I feel like the twist that, oh, he actually is the villain, I think was kind of ruined. I feel like it was telegraphed.
Certainly. Because you don't see it coming in the book.
No,
the movie,
it comes out of nowhere in the book.
Yeah, it's sort of, there's a MacGuffin in the book, and it's really not that way in the movie. And to tie it back to Batman and Robin, I think his suit in the movie looked very like, it didn't look like the other ones. That looked like a very comic booky suit where, like, nipples on the bat suit.
And they didn't play it up. I mean, the stuff that they felt like they should have focused on more, they didn't. And instead they focused on the other stuff that they didn't need to. There was some good moments that could have been that I just don't feel like they hit. I feel like Dan and Lori going out at 3 a.m. and stumbling across a fire, I feel like that could have been a really cool moment that I thought was over-stylized, that Zack Snyder wanted to be the star of that moment and not what was actually going on. And the ending, I don't feel like Ozymandias was built up enough to get to that point. What I love about the novel, and this is where it's hard, this is where I'm getting nitpicky, because in the novel, you get to know the doctor as he's buying newspapers. You get to know the kid that's reading Tales from the Black Freighter, the newspaper vendor. You get to know the random people on the street. So when you see millions of people die, and you see that happens in New York City, and there's all these side characters that you've known, like, oh, that's sad. But this just kind of came, and it's just like, millions are dead. Oh, all right, cool. Millions of people that didn't matter up until right now because they're dead. There was no connection there. Maybe it's because I was so turned off by the direction they took with the ending that I didn't feel that. When you read Watchmen, it's like, who is right? Is Ozymandias right? Is Rorschach right? Like, you can make the argument either way. Like, you can make the case for either one of them being the villain or being the good guy. The movie, I don't really feel like left that debate open. No, I feel like it kind of just shut the door.
It paints good guy, bad guy, and then at the end it tries to have that ambiguity. Maybe not even ambiguity, but it tries to paint, well, no, actually is good guy, and it tries to support it by having Dr. Manhattan basically agree to the plan.
Yeah, reading that book for that first time, I still don't know which side. I admire Rorschach's principles, but I get Ozymandias' point. but I don't like mass homicide. So, I mean, it's I'm conflicted. I don't know where I stand. I've read that book, you know, 20 years ago and 25, 26 years ago, and I've read it dozens of times since then, and I still don't know. But the movie doesn't open that dialogue. It's just like, oh, well, that's a crappy thing to do. Oh, yeah, Dr. Manhattan makes sense. Good on you, Matthew Good. I hope you have an enormous career from here.
But what's done is done at this point, so you might as well make lemons out of mass murder lemonade. And I think that's what I've sort of tried to do with this one, is make lemonade out of what I think is actually a lemon of a movie in The Watchmen. After reading the book, I was kind of jazzed to see the movie, and I was like, yeah, that seemed a lot what I remember from the book, but I don't think it had the balls that the book had.
Maybe that's why I'm so angry about the ending. I don't think, if you tell me they're making a movie version of Watchmen, I don't know that in my head, I'm not sold that I'm 100% getting giant alien squid at the end. But when you try so hard to be so loyal to everything else,
and then don't do that,
yeah, and then that's where you stray, I don't get it. It makes no sense to me. The logic will never make sense to me. I've had that conversation many, many times before. That logic
I
makes...
I feel like we've had it many, many times today.
Yes. That logic makes no sense to me. And I can't get around that. It's like you meet the girl of your dreams, and she murdered four people before you got to her. Like, she's awesome. She should be great. But can you get past that? And I can't. I don't care how beautiful it looks. I can't get past that.
That's become pretty obvious. We are going to attempt to get past this episode so that we can give you our next week's episode, which is maybe apropos of nothing. It's our favorite gang movies. Maybe if I can spin it by saying, well, when the superheroes and Watchmen originally...
There's no Zack Snyder movies on that list.
When the Minutemen were formed, it was for the purpose of busting, you know, gang members.
They were a gang of superheroes.
Right, and they were a gang of superheroes. So next week, we'll give you our favorite gang movies. A lot less vigorous debate.
I just really
hate
the ending of this movie.
I feel like I understand that.
And everything leading up to it.
Everything after the beginning credits.
Even
about halfway through
the opening credits, when they get too long, to the end.
The entire movie. Very, very long. This podcast is approaching Watchmen.
Wait for the director's cut next year.
Yeah, which is just Dave really, really getting in.
It's the R-rated cut of me bitching about the ending.
So look for that next year. Next week, look for our favorite gang movies. But until then,
keep it up.